Mm-hmm. All right. So we're holding on for the K. So the K on the bays is about two-thirds of the way down the arm of line against match play. Sure. Okay. So right now, okay, so we're learning... Okay, so we learned in the mission, we've been talking about the... We learned in the Mishnah about that if you cook... If you cook a chatas in a kli cheres, then we said you have to break it. And if you cook kodshim in a clean, and if you cook in a clean matzah in a metal keli, then you have to do mariko shtifa. You have to wash it and cleanse it, as we'll see later how exactly that's done. I mentioned before that there's machlokes between Rashi and the Rambam whether the concept of breaking kli cheres applies only to chatas or other kodshim as well. Rashi holds it applies to both. The Rambam holds it applies only to chatas, other kinds of kodshim. All you need to do is mariko shtifa. All you need to do is cleanse it. Cleanse. Because of noise, basically, is the idea.
Why would there be no noise?
It's not that there wouldn't be any other noise. It's not that there wouldn't be any noise there, but you could say that the Torah is maximum by chatas and makel by other korbanos. Especially, I mean, they're not bad. It's because it's nice and harmless gam, or because you don't have anything vain, or whatever. Yeah. Yeah. Okay. Anyway.
Well, maybe they're right.
Right, after 24 hours, sure. But that's also, I mean, we started discussing... Oh, interesting. Indeed. But yeah, we also started talking about the question. So Rami Bachama had asked, is the main issue that the keli absorbed, that there was cooked in it and it absorbed, or is it even if it was cooked in there, even if it didn't absorb, maybe it's gzeira takasu, that a kli cheres has to be broken. So we said, if it absorbed, regardless whether it was cooked in there or not, for example, hot liquid was poured in there, then there's no question that the din applies. The Mishnah said so. Echad she bishul boy, the echad she iru l'sosher yaseach. But Rami Bachama was asking the other way around, what if you roast a chatas, for example, in an oven so without touching the wall? So it's not beleya. There may be zeya. There may be, as we talked about at the end, steam from it that comes out and gets absorbed into the wall. So there's no direct contact absorption. So does the Torah require you to break it or not? So we said maybe we could prove from the fact that the oven in the Beis Hamikdash is known was made out of metal, the pashtus they made out of metal, so they shouldn't have to break it every time. But we said no, there's a different reason why they had to, because you still have, you have menachos that are baked in there, and baking a mincha involves pasting it to the side of the oven. So therefore, obviously, there would be absorption. Okay, so that's where we're holding. Hahu tanura. So now we're going to talk about more about this topic of breaking clay cheres versus the various possibilities, whether there are any possibilities of kashering them, and that's going to be relevant. We're going to see how that's relevant not only to our din of svachim, not only to our din of svachim, to rachatos, but also in other areas of halacha as well. So, the Gemara says, "Ahu tanura da aschu batichya." There was an oven which they smeared with animal fat, and then they baked bread. Osir rava bar ahilai. Rabba bar Ahilai l'mechla l'rifta l'olam. So Rabba bar Ahilai asked to ever eat bread that would ever be baked in that oven. That's a little milk, but even if you don't eat it, obviously not only if you eat it with milk, but even if you just eat it with salt, meaning just by itself, duma osu l'mechla b'kutcha, because you might come to eat it with milk. Kutcha is a dish made out of milk. Because he held, in other words, that once it was smeared with fat, then even if the oven is heated up again afterwards, he held that the oven, that the fat that was absorbed into the walls of the oven is never going to come completely out. We know that in general that's true of clay cheres, that whatever is absorbed into them never comes completely out. So therefore, he held that
since
you're sticking the bread onto the wall.
It's not the way we bake bread now.
Indeed. The Gemara says, Mesa, I have a contradiction, though. Braisa says, Ein loshen es ha'isa b'cholav. It's true. You're not allowed to knead dough together with milk. Ein loshen, if you did do that, kol apas kol asura, then the entire bread is also mehair gol avera, because it may lead to an avera, because you may not realize that milk is bread, and eat it with flushit. Kayotze boi, that is the din. There are exceptions, say it, though, which is, if you make it... The din is a din, and you could say Baal Pashka is the same thing about any trade of food, but the Torah tells us, or the Chachamim tells us, that you're not allowed to do it.
Not trade.
But we're saying the Zera of the Chachamim. However, there are exceptions to it, one of them being if you make it small enough that you could eat it in one sitting, because then there's no concern that you're going to leave some of it over and afterwards find it and eat it with the opposite thing. Or the other possibility is you make it in a special shape where therefore it's distinctive and therefore it's obvious to you, the shape makes it that you'll recognize, hey, this is loaf of bread and I shouldn't have it with pleasure. Such things are allowed. But we're talking about a plain loaf of bread that looks like every other loaf of bread and that's big enough that you wouldn't eat it all in one sitting. You'd use it for several meals.
You need to label it, we put it in a bag.
A bag may not be enough because you may not keep it in the bag. What if you take it out? I don't know. I don't know if a bag would be good enough. Okay, Kayotava is similarly, in Toshin at the Tano Baalia, similarly, the Braisa continues, you're not allowed to smear an oven with fat, with Alia specifically means a fat kale, but it means any kind of animal fat.
By the way, something like banana bread or some kind of pastry kind of bread is already a different shape.
That's already a different shape,
so
Okay. The Imtosh, and if you did smear the oven with that, all the bread that's baked in that oven is also because of the same there, but only achiyasek as a tanner, only until you next fire up the oven. So it's your Siddurava Barahaiwai. But that's a contradiction. Siddurava Barahaiwai, who says you're never allowed to be to eat bread that was baked in that oven. The Braisa is saying all you need to do is fire the oven. So you heat it up like you would heat it up regularly for baking bread. So Tiyuvta, indeed, that's a contradiction. Okay, so then Amalei Ravina Lamashi. So now Ravina asks Ravashi, B'chime Achar De'itoist of Rav Bar Ahilai. In that case, if Rav Bar Ahilai has been shlodged up, so even if an oven effectively for this purpose was made trace by putting fat on it, again, then not really trace, but whatever, the point is that you'd have the Zeder de Rabbanon of not baking bread in it. But nevertheless, all you have to do is fire it up the next time and you're good. In that case, Amai Omar Rav gave us the Pesach Bishavu. Then why does Rav say that when it comes to Pesach, earthenware pots that you have, or that chametz was cooked in them, have to be broken? Why should they have to be broken? You should be able to fire them. You should be able to fire them up in the same way. The tam stays in the oven also, but we're saying once you fire it up, then that's enough to get rid of the tam. Why should it be any different by Pesach? Now, by the way, I mean, the halacha is not like Rav in that. The halacha is actually like Shmuel, who says over there that you can clean them and put them away for Pesach. But Rav himself is saying that you have to break them, that even that cleaning them is not enough because of the chametz that's absorbed in them. What's the difference? Amalei, so the answer is Rav Mukilot Ahihi B'Shal Maschet. Rav would answer that braita that says that you can fire up the oven and then the next time you can use it, Rav would say that that's actually referring to a metal oven. He would say that indeed, an earthenware oven, which is what we assumed we're talking about to begin with, it's true, would remain also forever. In which case, actually, it would mean that also Rav Bar Ahilai is not necessarily contradicted. The Iboy is same of the Tanur Shoferet, or you could even say that Rav would say that we are talking about an earthenware oven, but the difference between an earthenware oven versus a pot, the difference is an oven is fired from the inside. You put the wood and charcoal and whatever on the inside of it and fire it up. And the inside is also where the bread is baked. Therefore, that'll be effective. It'll get out enough of the flavor of the alia or whatever, that then in the future you can bake bread in it and be able to eat it. Whereas with a pot, how would you heat it up? From the outside. Well, where do you cook with it? On the inside. So it's not going to be enough. So the question is, okay, well then why don't you, just in that case, why is Rav saying you have to break the pot, fire it up from the inside, fill it up with coals. Right? Wait. No. This is we're talking about a pot. Davis, the Pesach. So the Nevin has stuck in the name. Why don't we tell him? Okay, put wood or charcoal or whatever inside it, and then light it on, and light it up, and then burn out the pot from the inside that way. The answer is highest Alayhu Dmitri. The answer is the person is not going to do that because he's going to be taking care about it because he doesn't want it to break. So either some of the Mephoshim understand that it means that, in other words, in Tzachin, where this Gemara is also brought, Rashi says that what it means is the person may not realize that you have to do it from the inside. He may figure it's good enough to do it from the outside, like you normally do with the pot. And then it's not going to be good, because you still have chametz on the inside. Or you have other Rishonim who learn that it means even if he does, we'll tell him put coals on the inside of it and then light them up. He'll do that, but he'll make sure he won't allow it to get hot enough to actually be kashered. He'll leave it there burning. He'll be afraid of breaking it. So therefore, he'll put it in the cold maybe for a minute or two, but that won't be enough. So that is why Rav is saying you have to break them and there's no alternative.
What about if you put it in the oven?
Wait. So the Gemara continues, Hilkach, so therefore, on the basis of this din, high kubya, So now if you have a cubia Rashi describes as like a hollow tile-shaped container. Rashi describes that sometimes they would smear oil or fat on it and bake bread inside it. So from Rashi's description, it sounds like it's sort of like a muffin tin or something. Like it has a hollow area in it and you put dough inside it and bake it.
Like a cup?
Sort of, I guess that's the idea. Hasekim b'chutz, the problem is, again, you have the same problem. Usually it's fired from the outside. Therefore, it would be osur to do anything with it for Pesach because, again, you know, year round you're baking bread with it, putting the dough on the inside. Now, firing it from the outside is not going to be enough. The Gemara says over there that actually, in the case of a kuvia, what you could do is you could fill it up with coal and burn it, and that would be enough. And that would be enough to capture it for Pesach. I guess the idea is that a kuvia is different than a kedera. I guess it can handle the heat better. So therefore, it is possible to put. I don't know if it's thicker or what it is exactly, but whatever it is, the point is apparently there's not enough of a difference over there that with that, the putting coals inside it and eating them up will be enough. Okay. So getting back now to our sugya over here about. Pots, about there's a question of pots that chatas was cooked in that have to be broken, pots. So the question is, Elok deris shom mikdash amai omarachmona yeshavu. So now, Rashi understands that the question over here is, according to Rashi, the Gemara assumes, when we had Rami Bachama's question before, what is it? Is it that the Torah is makbid, that the Torah says you have to break a kli cheres only if it was used for cooking and it absorbed, or even if it's one without the other, if you cooked in it even though it didn't absorb, or it absorbed even though you didn't cook in it? So Rashi seems to understand that the Gemara has figured out the answer. That the answer is that we're only concerned about bilua. We're only concerned about if it actually absorbed by contact. That therefore, in other words, an oven, according to that way of looking at it, the answer is an oven wouldn't be a problem because an oven doesn't absorb. It's only there's no contact between it and the meat. So in other words, Rashi says, so if you said that it would apply even to an oven that a hatas was roasted in, fine, you'd say there's a cost. You have to break it, and there's no getting around that. But if we're saying that it's just based on a logical thing, the fact that it was brilea, the fact that it absorbed, and therefore you have to break it, then why should we have to break it? Nehedrinu l'kib shonis. Instead, we should have an alternative. As you just said, we should be able to re-fire the pot. Put it into a kiln, which is used for firing earthenware in the first place. A kiln is not just a regular oven. A kiln is a very high temperature oven that's used for firing earthenware. So therefore, put it back in there, and that will effectively. Well, the Tosfos explains that actually what it is it's not really a matter of kashering it, because the fact of the matter is we said that a kli cheres, once it absorbs, never gets it completely out. But what it is refiring it makes it, Tosfos says, like kelim chadoshim, makes it like a whole new kelim. So, Which, by the way, the Rebbe used to bring sometimes in this connection that we see in a number of places grow up the idea that a person is like a kli cheres. We say in Rosh Hashanah Yom Kippur davening, Moshel kecheres anishbar, a person is like a broken piece of earthenware. So what do? Earthenware, we're saying over here, can't be kashered per se, but what you could do is nedrinu l'kishonis. You put it back into the kiln and refire it and make it new. In avoid, nedrinu means return. Return. Means to return. So the point is, the analogy, therefore, in avoid is a person can be like a kli cheres that puts themselves back into the kiln, into the fire, into the mur of Torah, and remakes themselves into a new person.
That's why it says return.
That's why it says return, because originally it was fire in a kiln, and now you're going
to... Originally you were with Hashem,
right? Yeah.
So return to that.
Okay. So anyway, that's how Rashi...
Do it now.
Okay, so that's how Rashi understands... So that's how Rashi understands the question. On the other hand, the Rambam understands that Rami Bachama's question has not been resolved. The Rambam happens that there's a prophet in the case of the oven whether you have to break it, which would mean the Rambam would have to understand our Gemara. We haven't resolved Rami Bachama's question.
Because the Rambam says
that it's still a prophet about the oven. Rami Bachama asked the question and the Gemara hasn't resolved it. So therefore, according to him, the question would be, okay, so we want, but still, why, even if we say that even if we say that the Torah is massive and visual, then the question is, why do you need to break it when instead you could refire it? Aristotle Smith also discusses that the question could actually work either way, whether we say Rami Bahama's question was answered or not. Anyway, the point is that why don't we say you should refire it in an oven and that should be good enough? And by the way, you have, now, as far as the answer is, Amar Rav Zeira l'pishein oisim kipshonis b'Yerushalayim. Rav Zeira says the reason is because you're not allowed to make kilns for firing pottery in Yerushalayim. In Bava Kamma, you have a list of ten beautiful, you have things that apply in order to keep tumah. This is one of the ones to keep the city beautiful. A kiln produces a tremendous amount of smoke. So therefore, we don't want them to be in Yerushalayim. So because outside your line, it would be fine. But the point is, yes, Rav Zeira is saying, in principle, you could put the pot in the kishonis, but the fact of the matter is, how are you going to do it? You can't make kishonis in your line. So therefore, since certainly not in the Azara, so therefore, since you have a mitzvah to break them in the Azara, then that's it. You don't have an alternative. And you have, among the Rishonim, there's a discussion, what about, does that apply to regular klaycheres of people? Here we're talking about in the Beit Mikdash. So one way of looking at it, the Rav Yah, one of the Rishonim, says, and this is what's brought by halacha, is that yes, for regular people's kelim, the same thing would work. You could also put it in a kiln. You can't make it in Yerushalayim, obviously, but elsewhere, if you have a clear. In other words, when Rav said before, "Kedeiras b'Pesach Yishavu," he didn't necessarily mean that you have to break them. You have an alternative. You could, if you want, refire them, and that would work also.
In
Yerushalayim, practically speaking, you can't. You have other Rishonim who learn, though, which the Rav Yah brings another opinion, which says that no, the Gemara means over here specifically in the Beit Mikdash, because Kohenim Zrizim Haim, or because whatever, but a regular person not, because he may still not put it in there long enough, or at a high enough temperature, to actually make it into a new case.
What about new technology that doesn't use coal, that uses electricity? You
microwave.
So what? I mean, it still heats up the thing, right? You're asking what? So you think kilns over here? I mean, obviously you have ovens for cooking in Yerushalayim. We're talking about kilns over here that produce a lot of smoke. If they don't produce a lot of smoke, I guess there's no issue. I don't know. Okay. Amar Abaya. Abaya says, okay, but what are you talking about? You're saying you have to break them in the Beit Mikdash only because you don't have the alternative of putting them back in the kiln. Well, the Oitzin Ashpatet Bazara. So what are you supposed to make garbage heaps in the Azara? Every time you break the Kliseret, the pieces are just going to be left there in the Azara. That's not right either. If we're anyway going to have to do something that's not the covered gift of the Beit Mikdash, why are we saying break the Kliseret instead of let's override the Dinja Rabbanan of not making kilns over there and make one specially for this purpose so we don't have to have heaps of broken Kliseret all over the place?
What are the kilns in for broken Kliseret?
Nothing. If the kiln is used to refire whole Kliseret to make them like they were new again.
Instead of breaking them,
yes. Yes, exactly. Well, again, Tosha says not really capturing, but whatever, refiling them, yeah, making them reborn, yeah. Okay. Ishtemitze, so the Gemara says, when Abaya asked that question, he forgot Hodatoni Shmaya Bakalnavoy, this that Shmaya, that was his name, taught Rab Shmaya, it says on the side, taught in a place called Kalnavoy, that he said Shivrit Klaicheres, and he blamed them a claim. These broken Klaicheres in the Beit Mikdash, a nest would happen, and they'd be swallowed up in the ground in their place. So therefore, Abaya is asking that you're going to have heaps of broken kalim in the Azara. The answer is there aren't broken heaps of kalim. There aren't heaps of broken kalim because they get swallowed up into the ground. So therefore, there's no need for the Chachamim to say, go ahead and override the rules and allow kilns in the Azara, and therefore we don't need to.
My kids would love to know how that name occurs for the
rim.
Okay.
Okay. So the question is, in that case, okay, so now that we've established... earlier in the discussion, we mentioned the point that we said the oven in the Beit Mikdash was made out of metal. And we thought the reason was that you shouldn't have to break it every time. But now we're saying that in principle you don't have to break it, you could refire it. But now the question is, Ella, Hodra, Amar Rav Nachman, Amar Ravur, Tano Shamikdash, Shamasasaba. So this that Rav Nachman is saying, that this oven in the Beit Mikdash was made out of metal, why did it need to be? Ne'eved b'cheres, yes, taken to the Nimu. Why can't it be made out of cheres after all? Because you fire it on the inside. So before we said you can't make it out of cheres because you bake menachos in there and then it's going to absorb from them. But if we established before in the case of the oven that was smeared with fat, that all you have to do is fire it up, and then from then on, you can continue baking bread in there and eat it with milk or kofleshik, then what's the problem over here? Make the tanner out of cheres. and no problem. You bake a minute in it, fine. Afterwards, you'll refire it up the next time, and you'll be good again. The answer is the fact that it was made out of metal versus cheres has nothing to do with the issue of kashering it, you know, of kashering it between korbanos. It was a different reason. Kiven de'ika shteya lechem b'lechem aponim, because you have the shteya lechem and you have the lechem aponim, and actually Tosfos points out you do have other types of menachos as well that to begin with are brought based, you have minchas matzah tanur, which dafi yosin b'tanur or d'shosin b'tanur, those are baked in the those have to be baked in an oven and they become kodesh in the oven. The oven itself was in the Azara, that's the point. So, the oven itself was in the Azara. The tanner has to be a kli shoreis. Rashi points out, most menachos you put in a regular kli shoreis, a bowl or something, and you mix it with oil. But these things, the shtei lechem and the lechem aponim, are not mixed with oil. And in fact, the actual kneading of them, Rashi brings from Menachos, is done outside the Azara. Only the baking of them has to be done in the Azara. And therefore, how do they become kodesh? They have to have been put in a kli shoreis, and that kli shoreis is the oven. Therefore, have a little kli shoreis. Therefore, the oven itself has to be able to function as a kli shoreis. And, kli shoreis, the cheres, le'avdinim, we do not make kli cheres out of earthenware. So that's why the oven has to be made out of metal, not because of the problem that you might have to break it after every korban. After every time you roast or bake or whatever a carbon in there, but because it's a cliche, it can't be made out of earth.
Why?
The Hasidur of Yosef of Yehuda, like Ha'amar Ella De'eit, even of Yosef of Yehuda, says in a few places, in Shabbat, in Sukkah, and in Menachos, he argues that clay cheres can be made out of wood. You have a machloekas we'll learn about it in Menachos. We'll learn it in a couple of months or so, in two months, best of them. We'll learn that Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda learns from a ribui miyot ribui that clay cheres can be made out of almost anything, whereas the Chachamim say only metal. Abu the cheres, why? But everybody agrees. Even Rabbi Yosef of Yehuda agrees that cheres is the one thing that's excluded from being used for clay sharis. Therefore, you can't make the oven out of cheres because then it wouldn't be a clay sharis and then you couldn't use it during the kaddish, the shtei lechem, and the lechem upon. The reason is because cheres is like the lowest of the low. It's like even once you use it, it becomes dirty. It becomes disgusting. Clay glolin. Okay. Clay glolin. Yeah, fine. Clay glolin that are made out of animal dung. Okay, fine. But those are you wouldn't make an oven out of those anyway. It wouldn't last. But the point is, you find, for example, in connection with Hanukkah, that you're not supposed to use earthenware kalim for Hanukkah lamps because they become or maybe I'm wrong about that. Maybe you're correct, but I think you have a din for Shabbos, for example, an earthenware lamp that was used for Shabbos candles, and the oil in it becomes disgusting, and therefore you have certain implications about that in halacha. So in general, a kli cheres is like the lowest thing. Okay, so that is why the oven had to be made out of, metal. Because it had to be a kli cheres. And a kli cheres cannot be used for a kli cheres. Okay, you could argue it's a mitnei hakavod, but the bottom line is there's a kli cheres. Either a swallow proper swallow or you bring me your
swallow. Okay. So we don't get chicken
here. Well, no, not over here. We'll learn about it in Menachos. Okay. The Gemara tells a story. Rav Yitzchak bar Yehuda had a rov yo kamei rami b'chamer. Rav Yitzchak bar Yehuda used to, or Grezer of Yehuda, he's the son of the famous Amorer of Yehuda, he used to regularly learn by rami b'chamer. Shav came, and then he left him the other little Sheshes, and he went to go and learn by Rav Sheshes. So Yom Achad Ogabei, one day Rami Bachama met up with Rav Yitzchak, Amalei, and he says to him, like a popular expression, Al Kafka Nakdan, the duke, or the nobleman, has held onto me, Recha Ofi Lolayad, and the fragrance has come to my hand. It's like an expression that people use, like I shook hands with a celebrity, and now I'm a celebrity, or something. What do you mean? You think because you went to learn by Rav Sheshet, therefore you become like Rav Sheshet? Why did you leave my yeshiva? I wanted to have the chance to teach you and to learn with you. Amalei, so Rav Yitzchak answers him, Lav Mishum Hasi, that's not the reason. It's not because I was looking for greater cover that I'll be associated with Rav Sheshet. The reason is because you and Rav Sheshet have different styles of teaching. Mar kibbeinim milta, you, Rebbe, when I would ask you something, poshet l'misvara, you would answer me based on a svara. Problem with that is a svara is all very nice. Kimashkach namasnita, but if I can find a Mishnah or a Braita that contradicts it, parchala, then that's it. schlugged up because of an amur. I can't argue with a Mishnah or a Braisa. Rav Sheshe, he brought in a milsim in a parshat lima masnisa. Rav Sheshe, if I ask him something, he answers me from a Braisa, not just from his own swallow. And therefore, the advantage of that is the kinami mashtachas masnisa, even if later on I find a Braisa or parfa, and therefore I think I can schlug him up, no problem. Masnisa or masnisa. Okay, you have one Braisa versus another. Rav Sheshe is still entitled to hold to his opinion because he has a Braisa supporting him. So therefore, I like his style better. What he says is more unimpeachable. Well, okay, but then, no, but that, okay, Amalei, so Rami Bahama says, fine, try me out. Bamini Milsa, ask me something, the Ifshat Bakim Masnitha, and I'll answer you with a Svara that you can then use a Braisa, which you'll see that my Svara is supported by a Braisa. Okay.
Still doesn't bring
you. He says, I may not have, you, whatever you ask me, I may not have directly a Braisa for it. Rav Sheshet is the famous thing it says about Rav Sheshet and Rav Yosef, that they were experts in all the Mishnayot and Braisas, Rav Yosef is Sinai, Rabbi Oikahorim, for example, your father. Rav Sheshet is on that level, so fine. Rami Bachama is saying, I may not know all the Braisas, but at least I can give you a Svara, which I think the Svara that I'll use is so unimpeachable that you'll find a bride that supports it. Okay, Bomine, so Rav Yitzchak asks him. Okay, here's a case like this. Bishul b'mitzvah kli. Suppose that you cooked a chatas in only part of a case. So let's say you didn't fill it up. You didn't fill it up to the brim. You only filled it up halfway. Let's say. Ton miriko shtifa in its own. Does the entire keli require miriko shtifa or not? Now, Tosfos has a bit of trouble with the question. If we're talking about that the rest of the case, that only part of it got hot and the rest of it got cold, later on he's going to use the logic that the taste penetrates through the whole thing, the frappea, but if it's partly hot and partly cold, it's not going to. And if it's all hot, then of course you have to kasher the whole thing. It wouldn't just apply to Tosfos, it would apply to other things. So Tosfos has a bit of trouble with the question, but let's go through the story first and Rami Bahama's answer and everything, and then
what's the trouble?
The trouble is that Tosfos says, what's the case over here? If part of the keli is cold, then of course you don't have to kasher the part that remained cold, because it didn't absorb anything. And if the whole thing became hot, of course you have to kasher the whole thing, because it all absorbed. So what's the question? So you have different achronim, like Nosan and Birkat HaZevach and all talk about various possibilities. Maybe we are talking about where part of it remained cold, and he's arguing maybe there's a custom is that you still have to do miracle shit on the whole thing. Maybe we are talking about that the whole thing became hot, but nevertheless, not all of it was direct absorption, then maybe you shouldn't need to. Okay. Anyway, that's the question. Amalei, so Rami Bachama answers it, ain't a tone, the whole thing does not require miracle shifa, just the part that was cooked with, needed to have a haza, because he says it's similar to the case of dam chatas. We learned previously that the dam chatas gets on clothing, you only have to wash the part that got dirty, not the rest of it. By analogy, miracle shifa would be the same thing, you only have to clean the part that was used. So he says, behole tonalasi. So Rav Yitzchak says, I don't know of any braisa that supports what you're saying. What do you mean? You're telling me that a braisa will support what you're saying? Amalei, so he says, okay, fine. We may not know of a braisa. Mustabra could beg it. It's logical to say that it is like a beggar. Ma beggar ain't a tone kibbutz elamakam adam. Just like with a beggar, you only need to wash the part that became that got the blood. Akli ain't a tone meritul shifa elamakam vishul. The same thing with a keli, only the part where it was cooked in should require vishul. Amalei, however, Rabbi Tzur tells him, no good, me dummy. How do you think to compare the case of blood versus the case of cooking? Dam loy mefakeya, blood does not penetrate through the entire beggar. It gets into the part where it landed on, and maybe a little bit beyond that, but it doesn't penetrate through the whole beggar. When you cook something, then it penetrates throughout the whole cave. So therefore, you should need to. But oid, and not only that, Tanya, I have a braisa that contradicts you. The braisa, and now why he's asking the question, if you had a braisa in the first place, it could be because he wanted to prove that or it could be that maybe not all of this happened at one time. It could also be that Rabbi Yitzchak left and then came back later having found a braisa. Okay, I'm right. But oi. Maybe. Okay. But oi, Tanya, and besides that, we don't have a braisa. chomer b'hazam and merika u'shtifa, v'chomer b'merika u'shtifa and b'hazah. There is a chumra in each of these two things, hazah of blood versus merika and shtifa of a keli. Each one has a chumra over the other one. Chomer b'hazah, there's a chumra in the case of hazah, of blood, because that applies whether the blood came from a chatas katonis eaten or a chatas apnimis that's not going to be eaten, the yeshna lifnei zrika, and it also applies before the blood was sprinkled. In fact, it applies only before the blood was sprinkled, as we've learned before.
That's what?
That you would have to wash the clothing in the azara. Masha'enken b'mirikur shtifa, as opposed to mirikur shtifa, only applies to chatois that are eaten, because it doesn't apply to chatois that aren't eaten, because you're not going to be cooking them in a keli, and it only applies after zrika, after zrika padam, when the korban is able to be eaten. On the other hand, chumrah b'mirikur shtifa, on the other hand, there's a chumrah in mirikur shtifa, cha mirikur shtifa nehegas ben b'kodshin kodshin ben b'kodshin kalim, because that applies to all korbanos, kodshin kodshin or kodshin kalim. Again, we mentioned before that Rashi and the Rambam argue about shvira tzvicheres, whether it applies only to chatos or all korbanos, but everybody agrees, because our Mishnah said so, that according to the Chachamim anyway, that it applies to all kodshin. Rav Shimon said it only applies to kodshin kodshin, but the halacha is not like him. So the Braita says, the Merika Rishkipa applies to all Kodshim. And another difference is, Bishop mixes Akli Tone Merika Rishkipa Kolakli. And if you cook with only part of the Keli, the entire Keli still needs Merika Rishkipa, which again, following the two possibilities that Tosfos mentioned, either what we mean is that you're talking about a Keli where not all of it got hot, because there's a cost of that you have to do Merika Rishkipa on the whole thing anyway. No, but there are we're talking about. There's a cause of that. Or we could be talking about that the whole thing became hot, and the reason why he's asking specifically in this case is that, as opposed to other cases of Isurim, is because the fact of the matter is what it absorbed was not also to begin with. It was better, as opposed to a case, for example, where you cooked tray for food in a pot, where then what it absorbed was Isur, and here it wasn't direct absorption. Yeah. So, Mashenk and Bazaar, as opposed to Bazaar, where you only have to clean the parts that got dirty with the blood. So Rami Bachama says, Itanya, Tanya. Okay, if it says in a braisa, then it says in a braisa. And I take back what I said, sort of your conclusion point. Yeah. Okay, so the question is, a time of night, Taka, what's the reason why you should have to do Mariko Shtip on the entire Kaili, even if only part of it was used? Amakrova, in between Choshet Ushala, because the Pasuk says, if in a clean Choshet, it was cooked. And the word days, besides meaning in, can also mean of. Sometimes, yeah, the word days, the prefix days in Hebrew has a number of meanings. One of them is in, and one of them is part of. So therefore, so it means even if the clean chayshes, even if only part of the clean chayshes, it was cooked, nevertheless, the more after short time, the whole thing has to have miracle.
Does it use space for beggar?
No. Actually, using the drama a lot better. What it's sprinkled on, you have to wash in the makom kadosh. So there means only the part that got dirty, right?
Whereas here it says
bikli, which means in a case, which means even part.
Even part.
Yeah. Okay. Then we said in the Mishnah, echad, so that's the halach. Then we said, echad kodshik. Kodshim cholot, we said that this din of merikah u'shtifa applies to all korbanos, as opposed to the Shimon says it only applies to kodshim. So everybody agrees it doesn't just apply to chatos, which means when we just said in the braisa that it has a chumrah over hazah, even Rav Shimon would agree it has a chumrah in that regard over hazah. You would just say that the chumrah is that it only applies, that it applies to all kodshim kodshim as opposed to the other applies only to chatos. Okay. So turn it up on it. We learn in the braisa. How do we know these games? The pasuk says chatos. The pasuk says about a chatas, that if it's cooked in a pot, then it needs merika u'shtifa. Only a chatas, so from that you would only know it applies to a chatas. Kol kodshim minayin, how do we know it applies to all other kodshim as well? Tamad lema, kodesh kodoshim hi, therefore the pasuk says, kodesh kodoshim hi, it is kodesh kodoshim, which means that therefore so it applies to other kodshim as well. So it applies actually not just to kodshim kodshim, it applies actually to other korbanos. So Rashi says, because later on in the sugya, we're going to say, which we said the other day, that you have a miut in there, the word oisa, meaning that it doesn't apply, this din does not apply to truma, implying that it applies to all other korbanos, everything else that has more kedusha than truma. So therefore, when it says kodesh kodoshim, it means what's kodesh relative to truma, not kodesh kodoshim within korbanos itself, but it means even kodshim kodesh.
So why we don't apply this thereof for anything else.
Then we're kind of there. This is, what do you mean? This is there. This is a ginger rice.
Ginger rice.
Yeah, what else should we apply it to? Here you have the...
Anything that's for others to go to Kodesh Kodesh.
No, but here it says, Kodesh Kodesh here. Here it says specifically. Yochol Shani Ma'abeh Fatshuma. Because the pasuk says over there, the pasuk says about the zimim, about the murder for shuchah pamayim, and the next pasuk says called zocha b'koyinim yecholoisa kodesh kadoshim he. So therefore, in other words, the word oisa and the word kodesh kadoshim are extra, because we know already that male koyinim is it. Yeah. So yachol shani ma'abeh tshuma. You would think therefore that you should include truma as well. Would have the same din that you have to do miracle shtifa for a keli in which truma was cooked. Therefore, the prophet says it, which is a meal, perhaps the truma, for the prophet's truma. Digger of Yoga. Reb Shimon Oimer, Reb Shimon says no. Kodshim, Kodshim, Tonin, Miracle, Shkifa. Kodshim, Kalaman, and Tonin, Miracle, Shkifa. He says no, the din only applies to Kodshim, Kodshim, not Kodshim, Kalaman. Why? As opposed to Reb Yehuda, that it applies to all Kodshim. So our mission, I've gone up once here, because if it's Kodish Kodashim, because the prophet says Kodish Kodashim, and that means specifically Kodshim, Kodshim. So therefore, so that's it. Kodshim Kalam Lai. So Rabbi Yehuda, so the question is, my time is it Rabbi Yehuda. So what is Rabbi Yehuda's reasoning? Why did he disagree with that? Why did he say that the word Kodesh Kodashim E includes also Kodshim Kalam? Because he says, maybe Itzrich Oistach Mamo Oti Truma, because he would say, fine, but since the Pasuk, since we need in the Pasuk the word Oista to exclude Truma, Mikal, the Kodshim Kodshim, Tonin Miracle Shkifa. That means automatically, it has to mean Kodshim Kalam need it. Because otherwise, if you were to say Kodshim Kalam don't need it, Kodshim Kalam don't need it, then a Kavachoma Truma wouldn't need it. So therefore, if you have to have a meal to tell us not Truma, then it implies Kodshim Kodshim are included, and we wouldn't have known Truma is not included as well if it weren't for the word Oista.
One second. If you say Oista would be a meal for Kodshim Kalam, then what?
If you say that Oista refers to Truma, that's what Rabbi Yehuda is saying. So that's the point. He says, therefore, if Kodesh and Kalam were excluded already, why would we need a meal? Why would we need an exclusion for Truma? Obviously, if it doesn't even apply to Kodesh and Kalam, for sure it wouldn't apply to Truma. If we say, there's no reason to think. I was telling you the other day on Tuesday when I was away that when we were learning on the phone that you find that Truma is more lenient than Kodeshim as far as a Bas Koyin was married to Yisrael eating it after she's widowed, etc. Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So if you take Kodeshim Kalim, that would include also Truma.
Then you would think to include Truma if it weren't for the word Oista. Rid of Shimon, what would Shimon answer to that? Amalach Oista Kedanyim. He would say, I'm using the word Oista for a different language that we learned before. He says that this concept only applies to a, only applies that this concept does not of kibbutz for the blood does not apply to a chatas that became kosher, regardless whether it had a shatas kosher or not. We learned the other day. So therefore, so he would say that's what I'm using Oista for, not to exclude truma. Because I don't need to exclude Truma, because already Kodesh Kalam are excluded, and how much more so Truma? Okay. So the question is, a Truma like Boya Shkifa or Merika? So are you telling me that after you cook Truma in a pot, you don't need to do Shkifa and Merika on it? Bahatanya. Because that's what we're saying. Both Rabbi Yehuda and Rabbi Shimon seem to agree with that. But Bahatanya, but we learn in a Brasa. Kedera Shadishaba Bosol that Yavashaba Kalav, a pot that you cook slay shiki and you're not allowed to cook milk in, the indishal, but if you did cook milk in it, the nose and tam, then it becomes also if there's enough to give a taste to the milk, meaning in other words, if you had a pot that previously you cooked meat in, and now you're cooking milk in it, then if you have nose and tam, so in particular, in Shulchan Aruch, it talks about in the woods, if the volume of the inside of the pot is more than 60 times the volume of the walls of the pot, then you're okay, because then there's no nose and tam. But if the amount the pot can hold is less than 60 times the volume of the walls, you'd have to measure and calculate the volume of the walls and then multiply that by 60 and see whether that, yeah, then you would have a problem. Interesting, by the way, Merkabit the Mishnah wrote a short contrast called Breches the Cheshbon, where he deals with different mathematical issues in Torah and in Halacha. He has one of his essays over there, with a long thing about this, where he discusses over there what shape pot would be the most likely to have at least 60 times greater volume of its content than its walls. And he has a long, long discussion about it with various algebraic formulas and whatnot. And basically what he says is the ideal pot for that purpose would be one that's exactly half as tall as it's long and wide. So if you have a pot, let's say of 10 inches diameter, then if it has a height of 5 inches, then it'll have the minimum amount of volume in its walls compared to what it can hold.
If it's taller or shorter,
then it would be, obviously. But in other words, the point is, given a certain thickness, then yeah. Okay. Anyway. So therefore, truma. Similarly, if you cook truma in a pot,
the taller it is, the less, because you need to make calculations.
That's true, but you also have the more volume of the walls, and therefore that counteracts that.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Yeah. More volume of the wall.
And the wider it is, the less volume. He does a whole bunch of calculations with it, graph it out, and find that, that's how it
is. So until you get to, I guess, that point, then anything that's wider going to be above the machine, and anything that's taller, it may not be.
Depending on the thickness of the wall.
All right, this is all fine.
Let's go on. No. The point he's saying, I don't want to get too far, I shouldn't have mentioned this, maybe we're getting too far off topic. But the point is that in either direction, the more the height of the pot departs from half of the length or the half of the width, the less is going to be the ratio of the volume of it to the volume of the wall.
You have to either way. So that's like a peak.
Exactly. If you graphed it, it would look like that. Remind me at some point. I'll bring there's an English adaptation that was done of a few of these essays by somebody almost 30 years ago, a fellow named Lippmann. Remind me at some point. Maybe I'll bring it over here and you can take a look. Onward. Truma la yivashava cholin. Similarly, if you cook truma in a pot, you can't cook cholin in it afterwards and have the cereal eat it. The initial benefit is a dam. And if you did cook cholin in it, same thing. If there's not 60 times as much cholin, then you have a problem. So therefore, so you see that after truma, you also need kashrin. Fine, but the distinction that the Braita is making is not about whether you need mericha ushtifa at all. You do need it. But when we say that only kodshim require it, what we mean is only kodshim require, like we were saying before in the discussion of Rabbi Yitzchak and Rami Bar Chama, that you kashrin the entire thing even if you only took the part of it. Whereas with truma, you wouldn't need that. You'd only need to cash for the part that was actually cooked in. Because that concept applies only to kashrut. You have, by the way, there is a machlokas rishonim on that point, which is, do we say that in general, whether iser or whether heter was cooked in a pot, that you only need to cash for the part that was actually cooked in, and only in the case of kashrut, are we saying that there is a kashrut or not, or you have a didactic that all holds that way, whereas the Rashba makes a distinction whether what was originally cooked in it was heter, and now you just have a problem that you're cooking something else with it, which becomes iser, for example, basar versus challah, or whether what was cooked in it to begin with in and of itself was also. Like today for meat, or like in this case, truma, because here we're dealing with truma as also
to begin with.
In other words, implying that, for example, there would be a distinction between, for example, a pot that was cooked in which meat was cooked, and now you want to cook milk in it, where meat is mutter by itself, and milk is mutter by itself, from the combination that's also, versus, for example, if it was used for cooking today for meat, and now you want to cook with a kosher to meat, where then you would have to kosher the whole thing regardless. Okay. So that's what Abaya is saying, that's the description. The bishop of mixes kli tone ridiculous. Well, wait. That's what I'm saying. We're not done with the sugya yet over here. But there is that distinction that they're just showing him talk about that all versus the Rashba, and it's brought in Shulchan Aruch about ideally you should kasher the whole keli anyway. Everybody agrees to that. But whether the dievet is okay to kasher part of the keli, that depends. Eventually, I think the Shach brings that the distinction would be, was it originally used to cook something that was intrinsically alter versus something that intrinsically is mutter, and you just have a problem when it's combined with something. Okay. So, called tumor, like Sutter-Hellermarkham Bishel, implying that that gene applies only to cod shrimp. Tumor, you would only need the place, you would only need the parts that are sick. Okay, that's Abaya. Rav Amar, Rav says there's a different distinction that he's made. Like Sricha, Elul Da'amar Mar, no, the point of what we're saying, that cod shrimp require, that tumor also requires cleansing, also requires hagala, would be relevant as the distinction between it and kodshim would be relevant as far as what we say from in a brisa from mayim v'loy b'yayin, that mariko shifa has to be dafka done with water, not with wine, but mayim v'loy b'mazud, and it also has to be done dafka with water, because the pasuk says morak v'shutak b'mayim. So therefore, b'mayim means specifically water, not with wine, not with mazud, not with wine diluted with water. Implying, when it comes to truma, afilu b'yayin, afilu b'mazud, then you could even use wine or diluted wine. That would be a valid method of cleansing it. So there also you have a machloek with Rishonim, by the way. Does that mean that in general, when you do have ola of kalim, that you don't dafka have to use water, you could use other liquids? Or that Ramban says no, that what we mean over here is we're talking about miracle shifa. We're not talking about actual kasher in the boiling hot water. We're gonna see later on. We're going to see later on, actually, in the next Mishnah and in the Gemara on it, we're going to see that there's an opinion that Miracle Shifa is even only with cold water, so it's not Hagala at all. So fine, here we're talking about Miracle Shifa involving cold liquid. So there we're saying that right, when it comes to Kodshim, the pasuk consists on water, but when it comes to Truma, you could use other things. But not necessarily. When it comes to Kashering, there you would have to use water. So in Shulchan Aruch, it brings that you should follow the Ramban in that and only kasher with water. But yeah, but if you kashered, if you did have Gala with other liquids, then it'll be kasher with the other. Rabba Ba'ola. Rabba Ba'ola says, here's a third answer. This difference between Kodshim versus Truma would be this that we're going to say in the next Mishnah, Miriko Shifa B'Tzonin, that Mirika and Shifa is done both with cold water. So therefore, the distinction would be that the distinction would be that when it comes to kodshim, you need to kasher them with hot water, but you also need on top of that miriko shifa with cold water. You also need to rinse it with cold water. When it comes to truma, afilu b'chamin, all you need is the kashering with hot water. Tosfos brings up a point over here, which is from our, now you have a minhag that goes all the way back at least to the time of the Gaonim, that after you do Hagala on a keli by dipping it into boiling hot water, then the minhag has developed that afterward you rinse it in cold water. And Rashi gives a reason for that elsewhere, that the reason is because you don't want the keli to reabsorb the chametz or whatever that was exuded from it. But Tosfos discusses whether, based on our Gemara over here, are we saying that in the case of kashering for other purposes other than kodshim, you don't in principle need to rinse them with cold water at all, only by kodshim is the Torah insisting that you do that? Or is the Gemara saying over here, when it says at the end of it here, shifa yiserta, an extra shifa, does that mean that the Torah that always you need to have one rinse with cold water? But by kodshim, the Torah is insisting that you need two. In that case, then that would mean this minhag is more than a minhag, it's actually required al pi halacha. In general, the poskim hold like the first possibility in there's Dal Dedemek, for example, in Hilchot Pesach and in Hilchot Hagala, brings that nagu, they have a minhag to do it because you don't want it to be absorbed. It's not absolutely required al pi halacha. Only in the case of kodshim. The question is, and I'll say that works out according to the opinion in the next Mishnah and in the Gemara, that Mariko Shtifa is the cold water. But according to the opinion there, that Mariko means using hot water on it, boiling water, and Shtifa then means following with cold water. No, but for Mariko Shtifa, for cleansing the table. My Ikalimimah, so then what are you going to say? What's the difference between Kodshim and Truma then? Either way, it sounds like you need Hagdolah with hot water and then a rinse with cold water. The answer is Shtifa Yiserta, fine, but by Kodshim you need an extra rinse. So again, according to the two possibilities that Tosfos means, either the extra rinse means that by Truma you wouldn't need a cold rinse at all you need is a Hagdolah and hot water, and by Kodshim you need an extra cold rinse afterwards, or is it by Truma you need one cold rinse afterwards, as you always do after Hagdolah, and by Kodshim you need a second one. Now the Rambam has a whole different shita on this. The Rambam paskins in Hilchot Trumas that actually a keli that was used to cook truma does not require Hagdolah. He says that all it needs is miriko shtifa, is rinsing with cold water. So the Chachmei Luno asked him about this, the Chacham Luno and then Provence. They weren't Balei HaTorah. The Balei HaTorah mostly were northern France. But these are the Chachamim of the Chachmei province, the Chachamim of that period. After that, Mom, where are you getting that from? All Gemara seems to be implying that by Truma you need some kind of Agala. And then Amam answers them, I'm not basing myself on this Gemara over here, I'm basing myself on a Mishnah in Trumas, and he quotes them the Mishnah and explains where we see over there that you can even have bits of liquid that are still in a kadi that was used for Truma, and it's okay, then you can put Cholin in there. So therefore, the Rambam says, I deduce from that, that when it comes to, that all Gemara is not ultimately talking about what the final halacha is about Truma. The final halacha would be, like it is over there, that all you need is that the Truma has been pretty much removed and doesn't have to be captured. Well, not so much because the Mishnah goes to the Gemara, but because here you only have the implication of what all Gemara is saying, is that he's capturing, whereas there, it says flat out, that once a couple of drops to drift out of it, once it drifts a certain amount, then you're allowed to use it for colon, implying that you don't have to capture it. Yeah. Mishnah. Sure, I still bottled one in one mayor. Well, fine, Kachim also bottled one in 100. When it comes to
those last drops are a bit
smaller. So it's small enough that it's going to bother. Right. Mishnah says, Reb Tarfon Omer, Bishul Mischilas HaRegel Yavashah Boi Kol HaRegel. If you use a pot to cook a korban at the beginning of Yom Tov, on the first day of Yom Tov, let's say, you can continue cooking with it throughout the whole Yom Tov without having to do Merikah or Shtikah from one day to the next. At the end of Yom Tov, then you'll do Merikah or Shtikah. So we're not worried. In other words, Yom Tov began on Sunday, let's say. So we're not, you cooked a korban with it on Sunday. Now on Monday, you're cooking another korban with it, and on Tuesday, another one. And so forth. Rav Tarfon says, that's not a problem. We're not worried about what it absorbed on Sunday, which now you're going to end up eating on Tuesday, as we'll see in the Gemara one. The Chachamim Oymim adds manachila. The Chachamim say, no, only until, the Chachamim say, until the time of eating, Merikah or Shtikah is when Merikah and Shtikah has to be done. Tosfos discusses a little later on in the sugya that there are actually two different yusoyos over here. There's ad zman achila and there's cold zman achila, which comes out, therefore, it comes out, according to the two different yusoyos, are the chachamim saying that before the end of the time of eating comes, you have to have done merikah l'shtikah before that deadline comes? Or do they mean that you can wait until after the time of eating it is finished, and then once it became noiser, then you have to do merikah l'shtikah? So in particular, the Rambam versus the Ravid argue about that because, and the notes of Caleb and the Rambam explain that it's based on these two different views.
There's no man who
gets the No, well, that's since the Torah insists on murder for sure, that means we're not dealing with Gitzel, that means. Okay. Merikah Shtifa. Now, what is the definition of Merikah Shtifa? Merikah to Merikah Sakoyt, or Shtifa to Shtifa Sakoyt. Merikah means like what you do with a cup, is like the way you do Merikah with a cup, and Shtifa means like what you do Shtifa to a cup. So what kind of cup are we talking about? Rashi says a kos shabrach. A kos shabrach, a cup that is merikah meloshen morah, which means cleansing. No, it's not related to the word rake. Rake means empty. Morah means to cleanse, means to polish or whatever. Yeah. So Rashi learns that what it means is like this. When it comes to a kos shabrach, a cup of wine that you're going to use for benching or other brachas, it has to be rinsed inside and out. So Rashi explains it, for merikah would mean rinsing it on the inside, and shtifa would mean rinsing it on the outside. So according to Rashi, that's all that merikah or shtifa consists of, just rinsing it inside and out. Then you have the Rambam and different others are showing him talk about variations of ideas, which is that merikah and shtifa mean more than that. Merikah would mean an actual cleansing, an actual scouring, and shtifa would mean a rinse. So therefore, so the Rambam talks about it, but the kos we're talking about over here is, for example, just a regular drinking cup. A regular drinking cup, after you finish drinking with it, you clean it. You don't make sure, you don't necessarily clean it to the point where there's not a single stain left on it from what you drank. You clean it until it's basically clean. So therefore, in other words, what the Mishnah is saying over here, you don't need to do more than that. You do a regular cleaning at it, like you do with regular washing dishes, and that's enough. And then you have the Ravid talk to the Ravid, that's according to the Rambam. And the Ravid, not the Ravid, it's the same Ravid Bala Hasagas on the Rambam, but this is not on the Rambam, this is elsewhere in one of his other Sforim. He says that it means that there's a kind of kos we're talking about over here is, for example, a kos that was used for drink, for that a goy drank shefa liquid, like yain nefesh, we learned about in Avodah Zarah, that you have to rinse it, you have to do a havdalah on it, so therefore it would mean the same thing. It's not just a matter of rinsing, like Rashi's saying, it means you have to actually cleanse it, but again, it means that you actually have to cleanse it inside and out. So those are the differences.
What does that involve?
So that would involve, in other words, actually scouring it, actually rubbing it, Mariko shifa b'tzayin, and this mariko and shifa takes place using hot water, although we'll see in the Gemara that there's actually a machlok on that.
Tzayin
means cold water.
Cold, you said hot.
Yeah, I meant cold, sorry. Hashvud v'ha'askala, as far as a spit that's used for roasting, or a grill that's used for roasting, magilam b'chamin, those you do have olah on them in hot water. Now, the obvious question is, we all know, when it comes to the halacha of kashering for Pesach, that such things, since they're used directly with the fire, you need not just hagala, you need liberum. Why are we saying over here only hagala? So Rashi and Tosfos both referenced over here a Gemara that we learned at the end of Avodah Zarah that discusses this. And you have a couple of different answers that the Gemara gives over there. One is that it does mean you need to do libun, but then on top of that you need to do mirikol shifa or hagala. Another possibility, but it means magilam b'chamin. It means you still have to do mirikol shifa even after you kasher them in the normal way. And then there's another answer.
The
lid, right. And then there's another answer the Gemara gives over there, and the difference is, since the Gemara gives a couple of other answers over there. One is that, again, over here, we're talking about, after all, what it was really, what it absorbed was mutter, because at the time the carbon was mutter. It's only later that it becomes noiser. So therefore, the Chachamim did not insist that you do libun. Hagala would be enough, as opposed to, at the end of Avodah Zarah, I talked about when you buy kalim from a guy, where he used them previously for today for food, then you need libun. And another answer the Gemara gives over there is that when you buy a keli from a goy, he may not have...
One says he needs two, one says he needs one.
Yes, and then so another possibility the Gemara mentions over there is the difference is when you buy a keli from a goy that was used for tzedakah, the difference is he may not have used it recently. So therefore, like whatever it absorbed was hardened in there, and therefore the only way to get it out is liver. And over here, you're talking about things that are used constantly, day after day, for kodshim, therefore it doesn't really get so powerfully absorbed that hagolah wouldn't be enough to get it out. So the Gemara says, my time of the Rav Akiva, what's your Tarzan's reason that he's saying that you're able to, once you started cooking with this pot at the beginning of Yom Tov, you're able to go day after day without doing Mirikol or Shifa in between? What happens to the Noser in it? The reason is the Amakra, because the Pasuk says, after you come to the Beit HaMikdash, for one of the Shalosh Regalim, Ufanisa Baboker V'Halasa La'alacha. The Torah says you should turn around in the morning and go back to your tents, meaning to your houses. The morning over there means the morning of Yisrochag, the day after Yom Tov, because you can't travel on Yom Tov. So therefore, the implication is the fact that it calls it Baboker in the morning implies HaKosav HaSolei L'Kulam, Boker Echad. That implies the Pasuk is treating the entire Yom Tov as if it's one day, and then the next day is like the first day. So therefore, it's a Tarzan is saying, the whole concept of Noiser, on the face of it, it sounds like a Tarzan is saying, therefore the whole concept of Noiser doesn't apply during Yom Tov. So if you started cooking with it on the first day of Pesach, for example, you could be going through the entire 7 days of Pesach, and only afterwards, the next day doesn't become Noiser, and then you have to do Mirikol Shifa. The next day after Pesach. Yeah. Tosfos discusses over here a little bit about the other possibilities of what a Fanisa Baboker, might... Well, no, that's a wrong comparison. But, Tosfos discusses that a different reason when we say Kosovato and the full and Boker Echad, in the sense that you have Tashlumim, that you're able to bring your Chagiga throughout the entire Yom Tov, so in that sense it's considered like one long day. Okay. But that's the question. Mask for Rav Achad Boy Bar Ami. So Rav Achad Boy Bar Ami asks on that. V'chi ain pigul beregel v'ain noiser beregel. You're telling me according to Rav Tarzan there's no concept of pigul and there's no concept of noiser during Yom Tov? Obviously not. V'chi teima hokin ami. So you're going to say maybe yes, maybe Rav Tarzan would hold that Yom Tov is special. No. V'hatani Rav Nachman Omer loy Omer Rav Tarzan elo zugo vad. No. Rav Nachman says Rav Tarzan only says in this one case. Of the pot or whatever that you don't have to that you can cook with it day after day, but not the regular case of noiser or pigle still applies on Yom Tov just as it would any other time. So we can't, that's the thing. So we can't say that we're learning from Ufanisa Baboik. Ela Kadir of Nachman Amar Al Bahu or no? That's the question. The answer is Ela Kadir of Nachman Amar Al Bahu. The Amar of Nachman Amar Al Bahu. Kol Yoyim Vayoyim Nachman Giul Lachaveh. What happens is every day, what it absorbed is exuded out in what's cooked the next day. In other words, Rabbi Tarfon is saying like this: if you're cooking it on the first day of Yom Tov, you cook a shlomim for it. Shlomim can be eaten for 2 days. So if you brought a shlomim on Sunday, if Yom Tov began on Sunday, for example, and you brought the shlomim on that day, you have all Sunday and Monday until Shkita. So you're cooking with it on Sunday. Monday, what it absorbed is not noticed yet, because it's still Monday, it's still during the time. Monday, you're going to be bringing other shlomim. You're going to be cooking other shlomim in it. So therefore, so whatever it absorbed on Sunday is going to come out into the shlomim that you cooked on Monday. Good. So therefore, exactly. And then whatever it absorbed from Monday is going to come out on Tuesday, and so on and so forth. So therefore, you never really have a problem of it becoming noticed. Well, once it's absorbed in the food, and then you're going to be eating it, yeah. So then you're going to be eating the shlomim that day. So what happens? If you cook a chatos in it, you'll be careful to cook a shlomim in it on that same day. So that way because a chatos you don't have the next day, but whatever it absorbs of the chatos will come out into the shlomim, and then the shlomim is good for today and tomorrow, yeah. At the end of Hurrius, no, but at the end of Abba Dazar. At the end of the Zohar. That's one of the answers that the Gemara gives over there, why the shvud and the haskala of our Mishnah, the spit or the grill, why you only need to, one answer over there, why you only need hagala, as opposed to if you bought it from a goy, you'd need libun, is because we would say that even the Chachamim would accept to that extent, they would accept the concept of kol yom v'yah na'af and deal with chaveri, and therefore they're not going to require you to do libun on it.
That's why I was not in your shear.
Okay. So then we said the Chachamim ad manachil achula. We said the Chachamim say until the end of the time of eating is when miriko or shtipa needs to be done. So my comma, what do the Chachamim mean? Amr of Nachman, Amr of Ravua, means mamtimo ad manachila, means you wait until the time of, until the time when the time of eating is over, v'hadr avidla miriko or shtipa, and then you do miriko or shtipa. So again, you have the Rambam versus the Ravid in Hilchos Ma'aseh Karbonos, who discussed does this mean that you can wait, that you wait until after the deadline is over and it's 10 notes there, and then you do Mariko Shtifa, or does it mean you have to do Mariko Shtifa before the end, before the time expires, or before it becomes noticed? So that's the Rambam versus the Ravid argue on that. So the different thoughts over here again, is it Ad Manachila or is it Cold Manachila? Because one way you could look at it is the Torah doesn't require you to do Miriko or Shtifa before the end of the time has come. Okay. So the question is, Menahani, really, where do we know this from? That you have the whole time, during eating. Maybe you should be required to do Miriko or Shtifa immediately as soon as you finish eating, even if it's long before the deadline. Ben Abba. The one prophet says that you have to clean and scour it. The next prophet says all male kohenim can eat chatos. So what does that mean? In other words, the point is, what would it mean? Miriko shtifa and then you eat. So the whole point is you cooked in it, you eat, and then you do miriko shtifa. El Hake said, Mamtin la Abmanachila. Therefore, what it means is the Pasuk is putting them together. The Pasuk is making a smichot, the hekesh between them, to teach you the concept, Mamtin la Abmanachila. You wait until the time of eating, either the end of it or after it, according to Rama versus Ravid, Lahadr Adabal, Mariko and Shifa, and then at that point you do Mariko and Shifa. So that's again, wait until the Zman Achila. So that's what it says over here also similarly as far as this thing between the Rambam and the Ravid, that it doesn't mean necessarily that you have to make sure, if we follow the Girsa over here, called Zman Achila, then it means we're not concerned about the fact that you're allowing what was absorbed in the pot to become noisy. It's okay, you can allow what's absorbed in the pot to become noisy, and only then do Mariko Shtifa. So you wait until after the time is over, after Shtia, in other words, and then in the case of a Shlomim, and then you do Mariko Shtifa. Or, choice is brings, you have the Girsa Ad Zman Achila, which is that we have in front of us in our Gemara over here, which then would mean that you have to do it before the end of the time. The pastor, it depends what we're talking about. If Mariko Shtifa just means it's cold water, then probably yes. If it means Hagala, I think it's Shulchan Aruch that says that you're not supposed to cash your kalim on Yom Tov, but I think it says B'dieved if you have no choice because you need them for Yom Tov. I think you're allowed to, but I'm not sure about that point. So maybe over here also, yeah. But now, we said in the Mishnah, Merika to Merika Sakoi, Shtifa to Shtifa Sakoi. We said Merika and Shtifa are like you would do with a cup. So again, according to Rashi, a cup meaning a Kohen Shel Bracha. According to the Rambam, a cup like a regular drinking cup. And according to the because the difference is, the Kohen Shel Bracha, all you need to do is rinse it. With a regular drinking cup, if you drank with it, you need to actually clean it, like you wash dishes. And according to the Raiva, the kind of washing that you would need to do to a cup that, a goy used for drinking Yai Nesk or something. Yeah. Well, meaning that you have to clean it very carefully. Yeah. So, turn up on it, we learn in a Braisa. Meriko b'chamen or shtifa, meriko or shtifa b'tzon in divrei Rebbe. Rebbe says that both meriko and shtifa take place with cold water, which is what we said in our Mishnah. B'chamen, I mean meriko b'chamen or shtifa b'tzon. The b'chamen say that no, the meriko means you have to do with hot water, and shtifa means with cold water. So in other words, according to that, meriko amounts to hagala. So the question is, my time is the Rabbanon. So what's the Rabbanon's reason that you need Hagdolah? They say, yeah. The answer is immediately, yeah. And it was Muhammad doesn't mean hot water as much as you'd use for tea. It means boiling water, yeah. So the question is, my time is the Rabbanon. Why are the Rabbanon insisting that Merika means to drink hot water? The answer is immediately, because they would say it's exactly the same as what the Torah tells you about Kalim that absorbs food from Goyim, where the Torah clearly says over there that you need to either put them in fire, if it was used directly over the fire, or in boiling water. Yeah, never desire, we talked about it at the end. So therefore, they say it's the same kind of logic over here, that you need boiling water on it. The Rebbe on the left, whereas Rebbe would answer that. Yeah, because if he uses it for his food, yeah. The Rebbe would answer you, have all of my coming. I'm not talking about Hagdolah. I agree, fine, that this thing needs Hagdolah. What I hold is that you need three steps. You need Hagdolah with boiling water, then you need Merika and Shtifa with cold water. Whereas the Chacham are saying you only need two steps. Hagdolah. No, according to the Chacham, Merika is Hagdolah. And then Shtifa is rinsing it. Right. So the Rebbe is saying that you need three things. Hagdolah, which the Pasuk is not mentioning, because that's obvious. You need that by anything that requires kashering. And then also Merika or Shtifa. And then also clearly with cold water. According to the Rebbe, Merika is not with you. Hagdolah is with you, and then Merika or Shnipa follows afterwards with cold water. Yeah. Okay. Merika or Shnipa, debas Hagdolah. I'm talking about the Merika or Shnipa that takes place after Hagdolah. Those are both done with cold water. You don't need hot water for them. Verdabon, and what are the Rabbon answers to that? They say, in Ken, Lichtiv Kra, Oy Morak, Morak, Oy Shutak, Shutak. In that case, the Pasuk didn't have to use two different verbs. It could have said either morak morak or shutak shutak, and then we would understand that the two things, that the two stages are the same thing, both cold water. My morak or shutak, the fact that it uses two different words, if it meant, like you, Debbie, say that both of them are cold water, why are we using two different words, morak and shutak? It should use the same word, repeated, and we'll understand that. I mean, two rinsings with cold water. My morak the shutaf, what does it mean that it uses two different expressions? Shmamina merika b'chamin or shifa b'tzon. Obviously, then it means one with hot water, one with cold water. And since there's no reason to use hot water after you did Hagdolah, obviously the morak itself must be the Hagdolah. The Rebbe, what would Rebbe answer to that? He says the Pasuk can have used the same word twice. Iksiv u'morak morak, if you use the word morak twice, havamina tredim ni morak o tredim ni shoytim. Then, we established in the Mishnah also that Merika and Shtifa mean, again, at least according to Rashi, that Merika means on the inside and Shtifa means on the outside. So you wouldn't realize that it means two different parts of the cave. You would think it means that you do Merika twice on the inside and you don't have to do anything on the outside. Or twice Shtifa, two times on the outside and nothing on the inside. That is why it has to use the expression of Morak Peshutta. Two different expressions, not
twice
because... No, Rabbi says it can't have used twice Morak, because then you think both on the outside or both on the inside. Because it uses two different words, L'chach Sivu Morak Peshutta, Loi Malach, Merika, Merika Takois, Shtifa, Shtifa Takois, can teach us that the parts of the Kali that you do it with, or the actual things that you do, one involves cleansing and the other just involves rinsing, according to the Rambam and the Ravid, or whatever, the point is, there's a difference between those. But it's not a difference, as far as the temperature. Both of them are cold water, says Rebbe. Whereas the Chachamim are arguing that the fact that you use two different words implies not only that it's two different parts to the Kali, but that one of them has to use hot water and the other.
Two different words.
So not Rebbe says there's two different words to teach us that it's two different things that you have to do. One on the inside and one on the outside, or one cleansing and the other one rinsing, but not as far as temperature. Whereas the Chachamim are saying that two different words teach us two different temperatures. One chamin, meaning agola, a full agola, and the other one, is shifa, rinsing, I rinse in cold water. Yeah. The halacha is like the Chachamim.
Regular.